ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय आत्मरामाय संताय कैवाय पते
नमः.
All obeisances unto you. Akinchanavittaya. Unto the property of the materially impoverished. So that's one name of Krishna, or one quality of Krishna. Nivritta, completely transcendental to the actions of the material modes. Guna, material modes. So another name, Nivritta Guna. Vrittaye, affection. Atma Aramaya, one who is self-satisfied. Santaya, the most gentle. Kaivalya Pate, unto the master of the monists. Namaha, bowing down. Here's the prophet's translation. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the master of the monists. Please repeat. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and a master of the monists. Now, does anyone remember something from Srila Prabhupada's purport that we read yesterday? The ultimate question. Does anyone remember anything that they... It's one of the benefits of being the speaker. It's easier to remember because you had to also read it and talk about it and you couldn't fall asleep.
He mentions about, Prabhupada mentions about actually that no one could be a renunciant.
Yes, thank you.
Because they don't actually know him.
Because in this case, he's talking about it's the very nature of the soul to possess something. So if we don't possess something on the material level, if we don't possess something on the spiritual level, because we have to, the consciousness holds on to things. If we don't possess something very tightly on the spiritual level, because we cannot be without possessing something, we will be forced to possess something on the material level. Anyone, thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Yes, I do remember. They happen. Thank you. But it's awful.
The analogy is even how a child may take up education.
Yes.
And the child should be a job.
Yes. Because to give up, to be renounced, means to accept something better. That What is the point of that? Then renunciation is very easy. How could you renounce that $100? Well, because you gave me $1,000, it was very easy. But if that's all you have, that's $100, just try and take it from me. You'll see. So, and then Prabhupada started speaking about examples of those who renounced for the sake of the service of the Lord. The Goswamis were ministers of in the service of Bengal, and Sri Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a big zamindar of his time. But they left everything to gain something superior to what they previously possessed. The devotees are generally without material prosperity, but they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, Prabhupada continues here. There is a nice story about Srila Sanatan Goswami. He had a touchstone. And this stone was left in a pile of refuse. A needy man took it, but later on wondered why the valuable stone was kept in such a neglected place. He therefore asked Sanatan for the most valuable thing, and then he was given the holy name of the Lord. So I've heard Prabhupada tell that story. And the man had prayed to Lord Shiva. He wasn't wealthy, and he wanted some wealth. And that's one of the very much main differences between a very pious culture, like the Vedic culture, and contemporary culture, contemporary so-called civilization, is that here everyone thinks nowadays that if you want enough wealth, it is in your hands. You have to desire it enough. And if you don't have enough, it's because your desire isn't strong enough. It all depends on me, whatever I get in this world. But in the more pious cultures, in the Vedic culture, they understood, even the worshippers of the devatas, the demigods, although we criticize demigod worship as being incomplete, it still had the wonderful aspect that the people who worshipped the demigods understood that if I'm going to get what I want, it is not within my hands. It is in the hands of higher powers. So therefore they worship the demigods. And that sets the mind correct for worshipping the supreme giver of benedictions, who give the demigods, who empower the demigods. So it has the right mentality. It sets the right mentality for the ultimate situation where one surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. But the mentality that people have today, where everything is centered in me, it makes it so difficult to surrender to the Supreme Lord. So this man was a worshiper of Lord Shiva, and he pleased Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva told him, "You want the most valuable thing? You go to Vrindavan, and there you will find one sadhu named Sanatan Goswami. Ask him, he has the most valuable thing, he will give it to you." So the man went to Vrindavan, he met Srila Sanatan Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami, he told him the story, "Lord Shiva has given me the benediction that you have the most valuable thing and you can give it to me, so I request you, based on Lord Shiva's words, that you give me the most valuable thing." So Srila Sanatana Goswami knew the mentality of the man, so he said, "I have a touchstone that anything you touch will turn to gold." Pretty good, yeah. Just imagine gold cricket balls, gold cricket bats, the whole thing. One time, one of the devotee who so much inspired me to chant Rupanuga Prabhu, he had heard that there was a yogic process for making gold. The yogis can actually make gold. So he wrote Prabhupada a letter and asked him, it would be so nice if we could have gold altars and gold plates and everything, so please tell me the Vedic process, the yogic process, we can make gold. And Prabhupada told him that you have to eat mercury, and then somehow or another, anyway, it it's a process that we're not exactly good to talk about right now. But he said, Prabhupada said, but the problem is, as soon as a devotee gets cold, he forgets about Krishna. So don't worry about it. So he knew, Sanatana Goswami knew the mind of this man. So he said, I have a touchstone, you want it? Whatever you touch, you turn to gold. Have a gold Shamasunda, everything. Golden Shamasunda is Mahaprabhu. So, and the man was so thrilled, and he began touching everything, and he was so wealthy. Oh yes, Sanatana Goswami, he said, where is it, where is it, where is it? And he said, it's over there in all the rest of the rubbish. We throw the rubbish. You just get it. So he was so thrilled, he went around touching things and creating gold, and then suddenly he realized, if this was the most valuable thing, why would he keep it in the rubbish? You keep things that are refuse in the rubbish. Things that are useless, of no value. So if it was the most valuable thing he possessed, and Lord Shiva had told him Sanatana Goswami has the most valuable thing, he was intelligent, and he said, why would he keep it in the rubbish? So he went back to Sanatana Goswami very respectfully and said, I think you have something more valuable than this. And Lord Shiva told me that you have the most valuable thing, and I should get it from you, and I think you have something more valuable than this. So Sanatana Goswami said, do you want the most valuable thing then? And he said, yes, Lord Shiva told me. And he said, then throw away the stone. Just imagine that moment when he had to make the decision, because gold is very sticky. What to speak of? Something that makes everything into gold, it's very sticky. It means you sort of think I'm going to get rid of it, and then you have second thoughts and it sticks in your hand because it's stuck in your consciousness. So Sanatana Goswami said, throw away the stone. And you know what the man did? He threw away the stone. And then Srila Sanatana Goswami said to him, now sit here and chant Hare Krishna with me. That's what he told him. And the man sat and chanted Hare Krishna with him. So there's the purpose of the story is not to show how gold doesn't have any value, because certainly it has value in Krishna's service. But it's to show that the most valuable thing is the Maha Mantra, is Krishna. Abhinatvam Namanamano, associating with Krishna through his holy name. And nothing is more valuable than that. And we have that, if we can take it. So that's that pastime. So Prabhupada continues. He asked Sanatana for the most valuable thing, and he was given the holy name of the Lord. A kinshana means one who has nothing to give materially. A factual devotee or mahatma does not give anything material to anyone because he has already left all material assets. He can, however, deliver the supreme asset, the supreme asset, namely the personality of Godhead, because He, the Supreme Lord, is the only property of a factual devotee. So the actual devotee, what he possesses, what he thinks he possesses of value, are the lotus feet of the Lord in his heart, and he won't trade that for anything of this world. This is actually a devotee. There's when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, had considered the qualities, the characteristics of his Diksha Guru, Srila Gokashodas Babaji Maharaj. He said that I've watched his qualities, and I've noted that it is actually only a Vaishnava who can have, I can't remember the exact words, but exalted character, integrity, exalted qualities. It is only a Vaishnava who can have true exaltation of qualities and integrity in this world. Why is that? Because he possesses the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, if something of the material energy is presented to him, Maya presents something of the material energy to tempt him, then he won't take it, because it all belongs in the refuse, because he has the most valuable thing. So unless one has the most valuable thing, one is in somewhat a precarious position. What does precarious mean? Dangerous position. Could go this way, could go that way. Unless one has possesses the lotus feet of the Lord in the heart, I mean, as really his most cherished possession, one is in a precarious position, because one can be bought by Maya, purchased. Maya can trick us. But if one really has attained the shelter of Krishna's feet, Maya has no power, because Maya, Abhimukhe, oh, can't get it right, Valajjamanam, Maya cannot stand in front of the Lord. She is ashamed. Cannot stand in front of the Lord. The external energy cannot be in front of the Lord. Because in the same way, a shadow or darkness cannot stand in front of the sun. So this is the real issue of life. And this was in many ways the import of this verse. We have to grab the lotus feet of the Lord. We have to recognize that we haven't grabbed them fully. And we have to chant with that type of sincerity of feeling. And then we will have the lotus feet of the Lord. Otherwise, we can fall off the perch, as if we were birds. We can fall off. So we have to hold on tightly to the lotus feet of the Lord, and pray to him, and know he's our shelter always, and that we have him in the form of the holy names, in the form of the deities, in the form of the Bhagavatam, in the form of the association of devotees, in the holy place where he is glorified. This is our shelter, so we have to stay tightly in that shelter. When I say we have to, I mean if we wish to be secure and not precariously situated, we have to stay tightly in that shelter. So, Prabhupada continues. That was a comment on what Prabhupada said, because he, the Supreme Lord, is the only property of a factual devotee. That means that is what he truly values. And because he values that, the lotus feet of the Lord, or Krishna, and to attain Krishna's service, because he values that, everything else can have value in relationship to that. All the zeros have value when the one is placed before them. So the gold can be used in Krishna's service. The microphone can be used in Krishna's service. The cars, the money, the this, the that, everything can be used in Krishna's service. And then they have true value because of Krishna, touch with Krishna. Prabhupada continues, the touchstone of Sanatana Goswami, which was thrown in the rubbish, was not the property of the Goswami. Otherwise, he would not have been kept in such a place. This specific example is given for the neophyte devotee just to convince them that material hankerings and spiritual advancement go ill together. Such a wonderful purport. Not that gold is useless and should be rejected, but it's to teach us beginners who tend to consider that maybe I should get one of these and two of those and five of those and it will make me happy, to teach us that no, that spiritual advancement and desires on the material platform go ill together. They are not compatible. It's like trying to walk forward and backward at the same time. Shamasandha Prabhu, if you try to walk forward and backwards at the same time, it won't get you very far, will it? Unless one is able to see everything as spiritual in relation with the Lord, the Supreme Lord, one must always distinguish between spirit and matter. A spiritual master like Srila Sanatana Goswami, although personally able to see everything as spiritual, set this example for us only because we have no such spiritual vision. So Prabhupada there is taking that pastime of Srila Sanatana Goswami's and placing it in a bigger context so it's not misunderstood. And it is also interesting that Srila Sanatana Goswami had, he had a touchstone, and yet he was living like a beggar. That's quite astounding. Mm-hmm. He would go and beg rotis, he would just beg some flour, and he would take it and make a ball out of the flour, and then light a fire, and throw the ball into the fire of dough, and that's what he would eat after it was baked some, so it was somewhat digestible. And he would go and he would beg, and everyone loved him so much. Everyone in Vrindavan loved him so much because he was the senior most, eldest of the Goswamis. He was called Barababa. This is described in Bhakti Ratnakara, that he would wander a lot of the time. We know that he would go to Govardhan, to Giriraj every day, and do parikrama of Giriraj every day. And sometimes it's described that he would walk back to Vrindavan. That's so far. And he would go, sometimes he would just wander from one village to the next. And all the Brijbasis there would say, "Oh, Barababa has come." And they would all, when they would hear that he was coming, and he was walking from one village, from the last village, he would be walking, and they would come and meet him. They would all leave the village and come out and meet him and escort him into the middle of their village. And then he would sit somewhere and they would ask him, "How are you?" And he would say, and he knew everyone. This is how Srila Narahari Chakravarti describes it in Bhakti Ratnakara. And he knew everyone. He would ask, how is your family doing? Your mother is ill. How is she doing? And how your cow is doing? And they would tell them everything. And he would sit all night long or whatever and just stay with them and hear them and chant. And then he would stay, and then the next day they would come early in the morning, and he said, "Now I must go." And he said, "Mother, I know you have a vow, you cannot stay more than one night in any place, but please make an exception here. I'll just stay one more day, please." And he said, "No, I have to keep going." They say, "Oh no, how will we live without you?" Then he would, and he said, "But I must go." And then he would walk away, and they would all follow him to the edge of the village, and they would all be crying because he was going, because his heart was so full of Krishna. And then the people from the next village would say, "Oh, Barababa is coming." And they would all come out and meet him, and then they would bring him to the center of the town. And in this way, everyone loved him so much because the treasure of his life, there was no envy in his heart. And because he was with Krishna all the time, because that's all he wanted, therefore he had the qualities of Krishna. So he was beyond the modes of material nature. And he was self-satisfied. And he didn't need the touchstone for his own wealth. He had his satisfaction on a completely different level. Just imagine how much anxiety you would be in if you had a touchstone. Why would you be in anxiety if you ever had a touchstone? Somebody, everyone, you know, what to speak of the government. You know, they'd be the first ones knocking. We know you have that touchstone in there, Mahatma. Open up. Have you paid GST on it? They would find some way. They would catch you for something and say, your punishment is you have to give us the touchstone, otherwise we'll take conclusion. Yeah, and then you'd be so afraid, and then everyone would be so nice to you, right? Everyone's, oh, Mahatma, we're so happy to see you. We're so happy to see you. But you know what they would be thinking? How to either get some gold from him or get the touchstone itself? It'd be so much anxiety. You couldn't trust anyone. You wouldn't have a friend in the world. And the people who acted most friendly to you, you'd be most afraid of. But Sanatana Goswami, he possessed nothing in this material world. And he was fully satisfied because he had the greatest treasure. And he had facilities for everything. When he was the government minister, he was the prime minister of Nawab Hussein Shah. This is a historical fact. And when Nawab Hussein Shah went to When he first became the king, basically of Goda, that's when he attacked. That's when Sanatana Goswami refused to go with him when he was attacking Orissa. There was an attack by the kings, by a king on the southern border of Orissa. They were fighting over some part of the land because that's the nature of being a king. So you never have enough land and you want to take someone else's land, etc. So they were fighting over some part of the land. So now Hussein Shah said, well, if he's fighting on the southern border of Orissa, this was Pratiparujan Raj, obviously I should attack the northern border since I'm full of compassion. And I'm fair in everything I do. And so he attacked in the northern border. So what did Prataparuja Maharaj do? Does anyone know? He quickly made peace. He made some arrangement with this person on the south, took his armies up north, and drove back Nawab Hussein Shah. So that was actually, I think they even got as far as Cuttack. At that time, he was aiming for Jagannath Puri in Bhubaneswar. And they actually had hidden Lord Jagannath. They were so frightened, they had to take Lord Jagannath and hide him. Took him out of the temple. It was such an imminent threat. And when he was leaving on that mission, Nawab Hussein Shah, he wanted Sanatana Goswami to be the minister to take care of everything. Run the state on his absence, and he refused. And he just said, oh. He called in sick. He said, I'm taking a sick day today. And of course, the minute Nawab Hussein Shah, after how many sick days in a row, he didn't believe it. And he couldn't get a doctor's note because they didn't have Medicare. Nawab came and he saw that Sanatana Goswami was all right and reading the Bhagavatam, just studying the Bhagavatam, engaging Brahmins. Because from the very beginning of Sanatana Goswami's life, he loved Bhagavatam. He loved the Bhagavatam. And if you read in Krishna Lila Stava, the prayers that he wrote to the Bhagavatam, they're so nice. Do you know those prayers? Have you seen them? They're so nice. You are everything. He said about the Bhagavatam, you are my only friend. You are my association. You can make a sinner into a saint. So that's what he was doing. He was studying the Bhagavatam, and then finally now Hussein Shah left, and meanwhile he put Sanatana Goswami in prison. So this was Sanatana Goswami. So he was such a powerful person, the prime minister of, and he preferred to live as if he was a beggar, so he would keep more carefully the treasure within of the lotus feet of the Lord in his heart. To teach us. So advancement, continuing through the Prabhupada's purport, advancement of material vision or material civilization is a great stumbling block for spiritual advancement. Such material advancement entangles the living being in the bondage of a material body, followed by all sorts of material miseries. Such material advancement is called anartha, or things not wanted. Actually, this is so. In the present context, so Prabhupada wrote this in the late 1950s, or the early, probably in the 50, maybe early 1960s, so it was 50 years ago. So he said, in the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at a cost of 50 cents. So Prabhupada was thinking, this is amazing that people will take 50 cents and buy something as useless as lipstick. How much does lipstick cost nowadays? I'm just trying to find out if anyone's on the, going around buying lipstick nowadays. Does anyone know? Has a friend of a friend of a friend happened to tell you how much lipstick costs nowadays? Not 50 cents. Anyone have any idea?
$20.
How absurd. For what purpose? What to speak of what people do all day long, just wasting, trying to find newer and newer. This was before the advent of the internet. Can anyone even conceive of how people live without the internet? I mean, it's so far. Kali Yuga has progressed. I mean, yeah. There would be no IT business. Can you conceive of that? I mean, three quarters of us wouldn't even be here. But this is Kali. This is Kali Yuga. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at a cost of 50 cents. One buys a, bring it more contemporary, an iPhone for a cost of how much can you buy an iPhone for if you get it without a plan?
Huh?
$800 for a phone. So people can bother you at any time and place. But that's only one thing that iPhone can do. You can sit there and go like this all day long. Obviously I don't have one and I want one, but I have this little HTC thing that only half works. That was a joke, by the way. Don't please search. Another one. So, and there are so many unwanted things, anarthas, which are all products of the material conception of life. These things are all based on the material concept of life. Therefore, I try to make my body beautiful, but the body can never be beautiful. The body can never be beautiful, and as soon as the soul leaves the body, it's revealed as being horrible. So it is the soul that is beautiful. And the soul reflected into the body, the pure, beautiful spiritual energy of the soul reflected into the body can make even dead matter appear beautiful. That's how powerful the soul is. And as soon as the soul leaves, the dead matter is dead matter and nothing more. So by diverting attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization. The prime necessity of life. And this is our basic preaching. If we want to put all the preaching that we do, the basic preaching we do in one sentence, here it is. By diverting attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization, the prime necessity of human life. This is our basic preaching. Use your life, human life, responsibly. Don't just waste it. As animals waste their life. Tarappa dhruva martadam. Human life is so valuable, and it can, through it you can attain the most valuable thing. Tapodivyam putrakayena sattvam sujye. To purify the heart. Not engage in activities use the life to engage in just animalistic activities. That sense gratification is available in every life. But human life is a special gift because of human consciousness. The consciousness to be able to use the intelligence, to be able to perceive right from wrong. What is valuable from what is not valuable. To reason. Prabhupada gives another example here. The attempt to reach the moon is another example of spoiling energy, because even if the moon is reached, the problems of life will not be solved. The devotees of the Lord are called akinchanas because they have practically no material assets. Such material assets are all products of the three modes of material nature. Which mode of material nature? Who has studied Bhagavatam, third canto? Which mode of material nature produces the gross material elements? Excuse me? Almost. It's false ego combining with tamagun. False ego, rajagun, produces intelligence. Goodness, the mind, and the Dikpal demigods. So it's ignorance, false ego combining with ignorance produces the sense object, the sense and the element. From subtle to gross. This is the description of Kapila Muni. So, the devotees of the Lord are called the Kinshana because they have practically no material assets. Such material assets are all products of the three modes of material nature, and we tend to absorb our mind in them, and then the material sense objects get absorbed in our minds, and you cannot break them apart. So difficult situation we get ourselves into. They foil means spoil and ruin. They foil spiritual energy. And thus, the less we possess such products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. Because there's such a tendency to look for these things for our security, and there's such a tendency to become attached to them and worry about them and become entangled them. So therefore, the motto that one of the mottos that Prabhupada adopted for the ideal way to live is simple living but high thinking, deep thinking. And the tendency, and I see this all the time, is to be so entangled in all the lists of things that you have to do, and you're trying to always clear your list so that you can get to what you really want to do or have to do.
Does anyone else have this experience? That, you know, there's something I really want to do, and I feel an urgency in me, and I'm trying to move everything aside so I can do that, but it never gets moved aside because I'm entangled in it all. So sometimes I just think about, I take a step back and think about, well, what is the thing that is inside pressing me that I know I should be doing? And sometimes it's even hard to figure out exactly what that is. What is it that I really feel is the most? Is it that I should be chanting more, or is it I should be studying more, or what? Preaching more, or what? But the entanglement of all the trivial details of life, you know, and there's so many things in all the forms you have to fill out, and all it overwhelms one's life, practically speaking, so that one always lives on a platform of consciousness that is completely opposed to not only one's self-interest and what one wants to do. Yeah, it's not only opposed to our self-interest, but it's completely opposed to what one wants to do. And a good example is the job. You get a job to work, and you're forced to work so many hours a week so that you can get the thing that will stop you from having to be working in the job. But you get so entangled in it all that you never get to the point where you get, or you're too old. By the time you're unentangled, you're too old. You have no energy, and this is broken, and this hurts, and this hurts, and this hurts, and the mind is absorbed in so many other things. And when one gets older, the vata actually increases in one's mind, which means the mind is more easily disturbed too. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj said, Komaram Acharam, Komaram, please help me. Komaram Acharet Pragya. Soon as you know, at the youngest age possible, soon as you know what life is about, take it up immediately. Dharma Bhagavatamriha. Because dualabhav manusha janma. This life is so rare. So how difficult it is actually to live on this level of seriousness and sincerity. How difficult it is to live on this level. Sanatana Goswami did it. So many great acharyas did it. There are so many even contemporary wonderful devotees who have done this. And if we can't be on that complete level, then we should always be moving towards that level. So that means keeping one's life as simple as possible. As practical, not as possible, but as practical. Because we have to be practical, because the last thing we want to do is, in a sentiment, go like this, and then when the sentiment fails, boom. That's the last thing we want to do. So we have to find a steady situation where we can move, practical situation, so we can move steadily forward in our spiritual life. And it will be different actually for different people. But one shouldn't also prescribe for oneself. When you get ill, do you go to the doctor or do you prescribe for yourself? You better get the right answer in this one. Don't say you prescribe for yourself. What do you do actually? Do you go to a doctor?
Yeah.
See, I told you. Thank you. We always need help from Mahatmas. So all the entanglement
foils the spiritual quest, Prabhupada is saying. He continues, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no direct contact with the material activities, because Prabhupada here is going over the words, word by word. Are we doing on time? A little bit. All his acts and deeds, which are exhibited even in this material world, are spiritual and without affection for the modes of material nature. So that's where the word affection goes.
The Krishna's activities have nothing to do with the modes of nature. There is no affection for the modes of material nature in Krishna's activities, even though to our eyes it may appear, because his lila is called Naralila. It's like the activities of the human.
What I think I should do, even though I could rush through the remaining part of the purport,
I won't, but I want to jump ahead and read just two sentences from the purport, and then I'll ask for it if there's any questions.
Because the Lord is the property of the devotees. Which words in the Sanskrit is the property of the devotees? Akinchana? Vitaya. No, that's the, I'm sorry. That's some other places. Tama Kinshana Gochara from the last, and also from the prayers, from the words of Lord Narayan to Ambarish Maharaj. Because the Lord is the property, please listen to this. Because the Lord is the property of the devotees, and the devotees are the property of the Lord reciprocally, the devotees are certainly transcendental to the modes of material nature. That is a natural conclusion. Such unalloyed devotees are distinct from the mixed devotees who approach the Lord for mitigation of material miseries or poverty because of inquisitive and speculation. So, the Lord is the property of the devotees, and the devotees are the property of the Lord, reciprocally. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? The Lord is the property of the devotees. Yes.
There's a similar statement in the ninth canto where Krishna says that the devotees are in my heart and I am their hearts. So the whole context is like the devotees are only thinking about Krishna because he's the only thing they've got, and therefore because that Krishna says they're all one.
Yes, exactly. Lord Narayan speaks to Devasa Muni. It's because Devasa Muni was running from the chakra because he had offended Ambarish Maharaj, and that Lord's chakra was protecting Ambarish Maharaj, and he begged, he was going to kill him, the chakra was going to kill him, so he begged Lord Narayan to stop the chakra, and he said, he aswatantra, I am not independent, I cannot do it, aham bhakta paradino, he aswatantra, ivarnipa, I am under the control of my devotees. I am not dependent, independent. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead speaking. And later, as Prabhu said, Sadavo Ridayam Mayam Sadavam Ridayam Twaham Aham Tebyo Managapi, that the devotees are in my heart. In that famous picture of Hanuman going like ripping apart his chest, and what's inside?
Ram.
Sitaram. And most astonishingly, that inside the Lord's heart is the devotees. Which is very interesting if you think about it, because if the devotees are in his heart, and then you open up their hearts, then you find him. And then you open up him's heart and you find them, and you open up their hearts and you find him. Interesting when you think about it. And all the universes are there too, inside of each layer, and everything in existence is there. This inconceivable Supreme Lord. So this is the most wonderful thing. That it's not that only the devotees are worshipping Krishna. Krishna places himself fully under the control of his devotees. So it's reciprocal. It is not just, it is reciprocal. It is a reciprocation. It is a relationship. How wonderful. Okay, I'll stop here. Any questions? Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? He has to go to school? Yes, so please. Thank you so much for coming. Hare Krishna. And also playing the drums so nicely. Hare Krishna. Yes, any questions? You mean? Please say it again. If we thought.
Like we have anathas, right? Like we have many different things that are used as an approach to service. So if we gradually grow them away with the touch stone, then how to keep it at that?
Okay, so it doesn't come back.
Yeah.
So. How did Sanatan, why was Sanatan Goswami not attached to the touchstone? Why? Because he had the treasure of the Lord. He had the greatest treasure. If we don't have a treasure, because we have to possess something, if we don't have a very valuable treasure, then we'll take these, tend to go back, as you're saying, and pick up these lesser things. Because we have to possess something, so it's somewhat urgent in a sense that we take, that we become very wealthy inside. And secondarily, yes, that's the main point. Great acharyas have that wealth, so maybe we're not on that level. So what do we do? So we can learn how to use our tendencies instead of the maya that will degrade us, but so they will elevate us. That's another way to do that. And again, we need to take the prescription from those, which one is best, which way to deal with our particular situation. We have to take advice from those who are wiser, more experienced, and who know us. Well, what to do in the particular situation. Is that okay? Any other questions? Yeah.
You mentioned the book Krishna Lila Stava.
Yes, Krishna Lila Stava. Srila Sanatana Goswami. Translated by Gopi Pradhanana Prabhu. Produced by the BBT. Beautiful. Beautiful verses, pretty much at the end. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Matiji.
How can we avoid the offenses by mind? We can reach some offenses that are covered by mind. So how can we avoid it and what consequences we face?
One of the good aspects of Kali Yuga is that we don't get reactions for deeds committed in our mind and things. So what we should do is keep our mouth closed a lot of the time. Well, no, we can't do that. Always chant Hare Krishna. Oh, if we got reactions to everything that went on in the mind. Oh. But we have to be careful, because what happens in the mind will become translated to our activities. And we should engage our mind properly as much as we can by in Krishna service. We should engage our mind in Krishna service. Is that okay? Yes.
Can you
Yes, Prabhu.
Here it says, you are self-satisfied and therefore you are the most gentle.
Yes.
Now, this applies to Krishna. Can we apply to devotees as well?
Yes. This is actually described, I think, in the comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura's text, that he said because the devotees are close to Krishna, they also have these qualities, but Krishna has them to the supreme degree. Yes, it applies to the devotees, but Krishna is the supreme self-satisfied. Okay, let's stop now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Gaurachai, Sri Sri Radhavallabha, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Devi, Sri Sri Radhavallabha, Bhaktavindiki.